Killer Keller podcast. KillerKellerOfficial.com.
You need the Kellervision app. 24/7 mini documentaries, podcasts, live shows, DJ live streams, top fives, subscription packages, plus products for all your podcasts and street culture sports. Download it from the App Store for free today.
Beatbox created.
Killer Keller.
And we're here to talk about world music and street culture.
Killer Keller Podcast.
Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, Killer Keller Podcast, live and direct, Central London or Central, as you need to be, serves you right. Tune in, sharing is caring, and all that business. If you haven't checked out the Kellervision app, free download, iPhone, Android, for all your street culture sports. Big shout out to graffitikings.co.uk and everybody else in the support team. We have a force of nature in the human form sitting with us today. Oh my God. Defenders Entertainment, entrepreneur, philanthropist, creator and collaborator alongside people such as, to begin, Swedish House Mafia, The Vamps, Chip, Dizzy Rascal, Drake. I mean, you name it, he's in there. He's in the mix. He's like, you know, he's like the raw ingredients. If you don't know him, get to know. He's the mighty producer extraordinaire, Corey Johnson, inside the place.
Oh, my guy, man. I need to get you on the team. With that intro, I need to just boom, chop that and use that again. No, but it's a pleasure being here,
you
man.
Now.
No, I'm telling you, man. But serious as well, a lot of people may not know is that then from when we actually started Defenders, I was already then seeing what you was doing and a fan of what you was doing from then, my bro. So it's like a lot of the time when we're coming into this industry, people ain't seeing the stuff that we're doing because we're then actually active and all that. But yeah, you was pulling some crazy moves. I was like, what the hell budget is this guy working with? And like, how did he get on there? And
thank you.
So yeah, yeah.
Did you hear that from you?
No, we were seeing those moves from early, my bro. So yeah, literally, that's one thing. I've been like an observer of the whole scene. I've seen each genre and then seen those that have kind of set the pace. And then really, like, after you then done, even I think, like, maybe, like, the tours with, like, Prince and these other artists, no one else has then been able to get that beatbox or that kind of b-boy to the next, kind of that next stage, man. And I mean, I've seen the DMC lot. They've done some amazing stuff for the
DMC
culture. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But other than DMC, yeah, like, yeah, that b-boy culture hasn't had that representation, so props to you, man.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Stay tuned next week.
You know what I mean? So yeah, just to put it there, guys. Yeah, I've seen the full narrative. That's part of the blessing and the curse of me, is that I've seen when artists wasn't big, or I've seen who really was street or wasn't street. So I've seen the true narrative along the way.
That's interesting, because as a character yourself. And we did have a chat before we jumped. We have a lot to catch up on and talk about, to be fair. You and me share a very similar, a dual career span. And that's extremely flattering, that coming from a person like yourself, that because you're a study. You are a study of the craft of entrepreneurial business within the music industry. I find that incredibly curious. I want to know, like, all right, cool. Well, if he's checking me, who else is he checking that way? Because I know you ain't stopping at any point soon. Mm-mm. It's an art, isn't it?
Yeah, no, it's something that I love doing. At the moment, I feel like I've just warmed up. I've just figured out what I'm doing. So for where Defenders is at now, this is just a new chapter where, yeah, it's franchise time now. This is time to grow. So yeah, it's an important time, I feel like, for not just UK music, but even for like what we do with young people and the next generation. It's when Defenders was started on all of the early flyers, the small print said it was Defenders of the Younger World Management. So I've still got that email now, dywmanagement@aol.com. You know what I mean? I still got the same phone number 20 years later.
Don't stop. That's what we're talking about.
So really, like, yeah. And we started off wanting to give young people a platform to be creative. At that stage, like, my first artist was Blade Brown and Lady Fury.
Yeah.
Working with, like, the Nasty Boys and Nasty Crews and all that. Yeah, Heady and those, they're the new school of it. Like, your Headies and your Harlems and your Zone 2s. Those are the ones that are using the space now. And then, like, my artist I'm managing now, Cristal. She's the one I'm most excited about because I haven't had an artist really around me in years that has then had me that excited, like, of everything that they do. So I'm a very big fan. I'm obviously biased, but yeah. I don't know, man. I think the last time even a UK artist caught my ears like that, even though it wasn't my artist, was when I first heard Dave. So that's the only, when he done that Jekyll and Hyde thing. That Jekyll and Hyde, I said, who the hell is this kid? Like, yeah, that on repeat, like, for days. Like, that caught me, and I never met this kid or anything, but I was like, yeah, this Dave guy,
there's
something
like
about
that,
him. Though. Yeah, yeah.
Knew you know when him. You think to yourself, oh, wait a minute, I've heard it, but not like that.
Yeah,
what's
just
this?
Like that. Yeah, what's this? Yeah, I get that feeling. So, yeah, it's always been to support young talent. Yeah, and then now we've just kind of grown, got an opportunity to expand what we're doing and just starting again, man. I was happy for the COVID as well. Mm. Like, much as most people was thinking, like, I was happy for the lockdown, to be honest.
Me,
yeah,
kinda.
Yeah,
me
no,
too.
The industry needed a lockdown.
It needed a reset.
It needed the smoke and mirrors to stop. It needed everyone to then have a nice, because when you're
congested
then,
as fuck it was.
Congested as well as then, like, social media and things like that as well was playing part of the problem, because there was a lot of smoke and mirrors. So even if you're putting in the hard work, you maybe then feel to yourself like you're not working because everybody else is celebrating. When there's only then work going on now, nobody's celebrating or pretending to, then it's very clear to see, like, okay, rah, you're not then actually doing as bad as me. Yeah, you're actually on this thing now. So, yeah, I think it's a very exciting time.
You're the first person to actually say how it is, and it's so fucking true. Back then, and I say back then because it's pushing on like over a year.
Yeah, it's ACBC, man, before COVID, after COVID. BC, So in BC, when they had dinosaurs and Instagram made you feel like you wasn't winning.
You know, we've all changed form and shape, you know what I mean?
It's like we've evolved now and everything like that. But yeah, in BC, it was different.
Yeah, it was. And you're right. To call it how we saw it, it was proof in the pudding when, for instance, DJs, we really saw who was the dedicated lovers of the choice of music that they played, because they'd be on Twitch playing the songs. Not only that retained the credibility that they used to play in the clubs, but they played their own experimental stuff too, and they loved it.
Yep.
And it worked.
This woman is DJing, and not because they're getting paid, but because they love being it. Yeah. And I think that's what the balance is, because in this music thing, like we were saying a while ago, like literally you got to put in that time. Like, how many hours you said? 10,000 unpaid hours?
Something like that.
The minimum. That's what the reality of this thing is. So if you don't love this, this is not an industry for you to get into, because this is putting in that work. So the DJs there that throughout the lockdown just stayed just true to their passion and their love, those are the ones them that literally when this whole thing's over, their tours and their shows and all that's gonna be crazy
with a whole different style. When we talk about 10,000 hours, let's just interject right there and give you a debrief. 20 years, Defenders Entertainment. And as previously spoken up to this point, yes, he's collaborated with a lot of people. I mean, old to new. I mean, before we even started, we were getting into some Blade Rodney P. Older's out there,
that Freddy Krueger and...
So I thought we'd use this as a respite. This is a time to debrief, give a new audience a sense of clarity at this halfway milestone in an average, you know, worker's career trajectory. You're at this beautiful halfway point. Tell us where it begun. To be in the situation that you are now, and I ain't underplaying this, you watched the ride on this one. It's some serious conversations. Where did it all begin, Corey? Where did it start?
I was signed when I was 10. So, like, Universal, people going around to different schools in Brixton looking for kids that could rap and everything at the time. They wanted to make some music about them not destroying the ozone layer, like the whole climate change thing. We used to rap and do all this stuff at break time. Literally, before I knew it, I was in a studio, at Soul to Soul Studios. Really great concept. The song was kind of shit, if I'm honest. But that was my first introduction, because I'm on, like, Whack-A-Day. I'm on Dance Energy.
The influences were...
So I was there, like, proper, like, kind of saw that pop world of it. And then, fast forward a few years of being, like, a naughty teenager and kind of living life and the rest of it.
Brixton?
Brixton and Stratton my whole life. Obviously, when they're not away and stuff like that. And, I kind of then started putting on events and, like, under 18s and started putting my money into raves. And then started then getting loads of artists and DJs then coming up to me. Then I started then investing in radio stations. And then from there, now I'm like, okay, then Larry, you know what? I need to then get some of these artists in the studio. Bearing in mind, so I don't own a studio or nothing like that. So I'm just kind of hiring studio out for a couple of weeks and just said, okay, you know what? I'm going to start doing this label side of things. I just started ringing around anyone I knew that knew one of these rappers from different ends. Like, I swear, you know Rodney P, right? Yeah, phone him and tell him, yeah, I'm coming into this rap thing, right? You know, Freddie Krueger, phone him and tell him I'm coming into this rap thing.
I'll type Freddie Krueger.
Yeah.
I just got worked to that. I remember that. Yeah. You talked about it before, and I was like, Freddie!
Yeah, no, come on, man, he's a legend. People don't realise that. He was doing them big American... collaborations.
SAS as well.
SAS, come on, them lot was them signed with Dipset and stuff like that. You know what I mean? I saw them boys when I had Too Much signed with Mario Winans and Puffy them. I saw them boys that are in New York a couple times and stuff like that. You know what I mean? Them days, Professor Green and his boys, they was just doing jump off and battles and stuff. They was Haunted House at the time, you know what I mean? Like, I remember those days. So, yeah, Defenders then started just as... an underground label that wanted to give the kids studio time. And then before I know it, we're then hooked up with Jenny Francis. So shout out to her, because even Stormzy put her on the interlude of his album because he grew up listening to her show every day. And if it wasn't for her really then introducing me to some people in the industry, giving me that constant airplay on her show every day and that exposure. Yeah, I maybe wouldn't even have taken the music that serious, to be fair, because we wasn't making music to make money. We just wanted to just express how we was feeling. It was just the love of what we do. It wasn't that we thought, oh, yeah, we're going to do this music thing. We was going and doing, like, bookings and radio every week on Deja and doing shows and that just to get heard. We just, every Friday, go to, like, Carnaby Street to Deal Real. You know what I mean? Do the little hip-hop cypher on a Friday and stuff like that. Like, it was rammed right out onto the street and stuff like that. Always and stuff like. And them times there, we had the other boys then with the hip-hop shop round the corner, Dark and Cold.
Unsung.
Listen, Dark and Cold
were it.
They connected UK and America, like the whole thing. Like, people forget Dark and Cold, that was the connect.
Before Junglist Movement and all the other brands.
Yeah, Dark and Cold set this whole thing. That's what I said, I got the true narrative because I was there. I saw what was happening the whole way through. So Dark and Cold, they started bringing over the American act. That's when I got to like Buck, like 50 and Eminem and all them lot, where they're just happy to get little shine on the mic and little boom, come and do little shows. These ain't no mega stars or nothing like that. These are artists on their grind. And like, Dark and Cold, they was patterning up all of that then before anyone else. Because them and a dude named Digger, he had a little publishing setup. He was the only one who was spending money on this hip-hop thing. So, yeah, Wild Pitch.
Yes. And Mr. Bongos as well.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Black Market. Yeah, exactly. Black Market and that. But them lot was them, where they was capitalising the drum and bass thing, Wild Pitch and them lot, and Dark and Cold, they was investing in this hip-hop thing
for me.
Them, and then Jump Off then came in and started them giving the B-boys them a shake.
Yeah. And then you got all the components that are active and all in the West End. They're all doing their thing.
Yeah, there was. But that's where it started. It wasn't a Shoreditch thing. This is a Carnaby Street movement that then started this UK hip-hop thing. You know what I mean? So, like, literally, we was coming from North, South, East and West and coming to Carnaby Street. That was like the home of hip hop. That's where this sound then started. That's where Vice magazine had to put out their first issues. That's where
the little booklets, yeah, not the big ones,
the little booklets of Vice magazine and stuff. So that's where this culture started in Carnaby Street.
Yeah. When you say Wild Pitch, Rare Groove, and all these different,
and in West London and that, man, there was that that place where Slick Rick and them lot performed. Subterranean. Yeah, that's where then the hip-hop and live started.
I remember they used to do, whenever a store had a party, like a 10-year anniversary, they'd go Subterranean or something.
Yeah, come on, it's just...
ram out, like,
but
busy.
It's just for that kind of musical culture. That was part of it, you know what I mean? So that's where... Yeah, and then, boy, we started doing mixtapes, putting on artists. The beginning, first, artists we was even then, like, always supporting all the artists around us. So at that time, it's like SMS and PDC. And then every year or so, it's just the new sound from the streets. I guess that's... So whatever the genre is, we've been then involved in that genre. And like in 2010, when they were saying that we're just urban, we then started the This Is compilation series.
Yes,
where I'm
that.
Like, yeah, this is UK rap, this is UK grime, this is dancehall, this is funky house, because they kind of were saying, yeah, everything's urban. And I'm like, no, like, everything's not urban.
Clever little box packaging from the media. Yeah,
but it's the media, and plus as well, it's like, I remember when it changed from being black music, which it actually was, to actually being urban.
Yeah,
because even if people Google it now, I'm sure it's still online. The whole slogan for BBC One Extra when they started is "We love black music."
Yeah.
That was their thing, and then they changed it to "We love urban music." But that was their slogan for the first couple years. So then from there, the media decided, "Yo, you know what? This is urban," and then became it. But it always then had a thing, but because it wasn't about a cultural thing divide. It was just that they needed to find a way that showed that, yeah, okay, this is a sound everyone's making, but there's still, if you've got then what they call Asian music, or you've got what you call then reggae or thing, it doesn't come with a, just like our UK, it doesn't come with a skin tone or come with a religious belief. It comes now with a class divide.
Yes.
Because classism is our issue more than racism now.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And that's then the realness of it. So they need to find a way to kind of class everybody. I guess that's the only way they could logically then find. So I understand the thing of it, where some people say, oh, but they just changed it. But I'm like, yeah, well, the way they just changed it is because from when that sound of like grime, drum and bass, jungle, that was then the sound of London. That sound of London was very multicultural.
Yeah.
That sound was then about those poorer classes needing a voice.
Mm.
So then that then what then made it like urban for them, because they didn't know another way of explaining us.
And you understand why this guy's been doing it for 20 plus years? This is
they changed it on us, but I understand why as well. So it's like, because we've had different ways that they've even articulated as towards why grime started, and because of Canary Wharf and the rest of it, when really if you look at the drill sound now, you look at grime, you look at where rap was at then, to where rap's at now, then whether you change the tempo, or even if I start like beating my glasses against this glass or whatever the beat is, what they're saying is just the social and economic issues that they're facing.
They're still faced with, that still apply, like we were saying about Dave, you know, it just sounds different, but it's talking in a way that, you know, it's speaking to the crowd.
Yeah, what they understand it is, they somehow they can relate, and then the ones who then maybe can't relate, they can still feel the energy of what it is and feel that realness. That's why a lot of the time when I speak to artists about them making music that's real, keeping it real isn't about keeping it gangster. Keeping it real is then making music that's real to you, because even if you're a little kid and you're rapping about, rah, mum won't let me play out, and rah, I hate having cereal every morning. Bare other youths them can't get to play out and they hate having cereal in the morning. So before you know it, your song's number one on TikTok, because everyone can relate. But for this little kid, he'll be splashing that dash. I'm saying, no, my guy, what's your reality? What's real? What's real in your life? And I feel that that's where, like, for me, like, even when I stopped making music, because I've gone from being that artist, and then once I started the studio, and started to get more, started my charity, I started to become much more involved in the office life. I couldn't then make music about being on the streets or about hustling and that, because I wasn't doing that anymore.
How did you feel about that transition from being, you know, having the majority of your, the percentage of your brain devoted to the creative side, and then having to kind of filter through and factor in and almost overpower your mind to be more working in an office mindset?
Hard at first, I guess, because as like a creative, even like now, I'm still having to always adjust. So a lot of the way I do things is very unorthodox compared to then.
Yeah.
Welcome to the party,
pal.
So my approach to most things is not normal even now.
But perhaps that's the endearment of, like, or at least the you're rejigging things to a different way of thinking that not a lot of people would in normal conventional business.
Yeah, I think that comes with some of the blessing, also comes with the curse that you've got then. I'll think, like I say to people all the time, like I'm four eyes with the foresight. You know what I mean? So I can see what's coming up the road, but then it's sometimes you can see what's then coming when you act upon it, how you act upon it. Like, everything's timing.
Yeah.
And I feel like sometimes I've done things that's been ahead of their time, so that's also been it's like anything, man. You come to the party too early. You turn up at, like, especially like me, I'm in like the Jamaican community. Mm. So you go to a bashment dance, even up until like 12 o'clock at night, it's dead. Tumbleweed, everything. You're thinking, what's going on?
See, I'm always the one that got there early.
Yeah. Now come 2 a.m.
It's
ram. You're thinking, what the fuck? But you turn up to a bashment dance early, yeah. You're thinking, yeah, this is not the spot. But literally, so yeah, I feel like that's been me, man. I've turned up to the dance early.
Mm, timing is to a lot of artists, it's the difference between being a cult classic and being a pop sensation. If you're too early, you're a cult classic.
Yeah.
If you're on time, it's pop sensation.
Yes, and that's the thing of it. And I feel like that's with most of the stuff is that with me, I've been this blessed that as much as when I've had then different things that have maybe been emotional hurdles, whether it's my personal life, family life, whether it's then financial circumstances or whether it's business circumstances, I've always just stuck to the fact that I'm not doing it just for money. And I think that's what's been my win. Because if I was doing it just for money, I'd have fucking given up long time ago.
You've got to have a conduit. You've got to have a reason.
Yeah, and I think that because I was just always trying to then get what I was doing to a certain place, I'll get up every day and do what I'm doing, even if I'm not getting paid, even if I'm not making money. And I think that that's what a lot of people have seen, this gold rush that's happened. But really, this is the 7th gold rush that I've seen.
Yeah.
7th time when labels started signing everybody, excuse me. And 7th time I've seen, like, everyone's getting shows, everyone's winning, and then it literally goes completely dead. Nobody's getting a deal or meal for about 18 months to 2 years.
Then
we've got to go back, build something from the underground again. Yeah. And then from all of a sudden, because then some new sound's playing and boom, and getting its own money, it's starting to get a buzz. Then now, we're back again. I feel like, we've got to get past that bit now. Now is when, even as an industry, we need to develop artists, develop that next sound. We need to then look about things them like their mental health, their financial health. We need to have, because we're coming from poor communities where we don't have financial or any form of, we don't have financial literacy. We don't have like that political literacy. We don't have any form of the education that we need in order then for us to live in the normal society.
Before Bitcoin, NFT and all this other stuff you're talking about.
Yeah, I'm talking about the basics. We're learning things in school that we're never going to use.
Nah.
They're not life skills. I don't remember the last time I used algebra
Bar chart that goes up and down little lines and all that.
It's a good majority of it, because to be fair, we're being taught like from like the different layers of society.
Yeah.
And us that's coming from the poorer communities, our creativity is our biggest thing that we've got. Like, that's I think most people really, really underestimate. Like, then for something that we can have that can make something out of nothing, England hasn't got nothing else that they're manufacturing for the world right now.
At all.
No one's waiting for us.
They're already strangling the music thing.
Yeah, exactly. But this is what we've got right now. Yeah. They need to manufacture and harvest this creativity. 100%. That's our thing to give to the world, whether it's like from your One Directions to your Stormzy to your Heady Ones and to the drill sound, to what we do on live, the live engineers, the even the musicians and stuff. Like, England has put a massive boom, part of its income comes from what we do in entertainment. So I feel like that's what needs to be established, is that development, not just for street music, but just development for this young talent and culture of what we do, regardless of the genre. I think that's what's missing.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's what I'm massively advocate for. So as much as my thing's hip-hop, like, boy, you never know, my next act might be a rock act and stuff like that. Yeah, because my thing's good music.
Swedish House Mafia. Dizzy's done the whole thing, Vamps,
I'm not stuck in one genre. I'm always trying different things. I'm in the gaming world right now. I'm there.
We got that as well. we got some levels today.
There's things that I'm still just venturing into. So shout out to the to Benedict and the team as well, like the Electric Noir tech team that we partnered with. They developed while we then partnered with them a little while ago, now a couple of years. It's gone by quick, but they developed a whole crime series, like only way I can describe it is like Cluedo.
What's the name of it again? Because I did check it out.
Dead Man's Phone.
And it's almost like the app is the kid's phone.
Yeah.
And within that app is all the layout and formation of what the last thing was that he was a part of on his phone, and you've got to go through the phone and figure out
how he got killed is all this thing. Yeah, got a BAFTA nomination last year. So big up to BAFTA and them lot.
You're dealing greatness on the podcast.
As well as then Alex Hong, the co-creator of Candy Crush, has come on board with the team with Electric North. So them lot are doing some amazing moves there as well. And then we've got the mixtape we're going to put out later on in the year when the game has an update with a music player on there called Vibes. So we're just kind of, so we're just kind of testing in different industries right now. You know what I mean? I think that's a big part of it as well, is I've never been stuck in... because when I came to my studio, it was like a video production team. I only came there to actually to license the videos they was making for Channel U, because I was building like YouTube and Spotify at the time. Because I was like, okay, well, I don't have an iPhone, so where do I get music from on this internet thing?
Mm-hmm.
So I then got some tech teams and stuff like that and started then building the technology. And if I just actually done the HTML version, I was stuck on having Flash animation. If I listened to them and just done the HTML version...
Exactly, forget it.
Yeah, I'd have gone to the moon by then. But me, I needed the bells and whistles. I was convinced the internet can do all the stuff that it's doing now. I wanted it to do like 20 years ago.
Getting ahead of the curve.
Yeah, but I'm like, nah, man, Musk can do this. And when they come on the site, it has to open up and do... Yeah, if I just listened and done the boring version, but I guess all the other stuff I wouldn't have ended up doing, I wouldn't have been in the tech world a lot
earlier. To a lot of people that are listening to this right now, Corey, and this is the mark of an expert, you make it sound very easy. Now, I know those situations when you're in a record store or a club, but I've been there and I can feel the energy, my intentions, like, especially as a younger person, it's impossible to not feel look as thirsty as you feel. And you're around these people and you're like, yo, how do I do? All I want to do is just, I want him to be aware of me. I want her to connect. It's so hard, isn't it? And to a lot of people, that'd be like, they're there now.
It's not easy at all. I've been there, made that same mistake on loads of occasions. And depending on also as well what you're going through in your... in your personal or even in your work life.
Financial life,
For us as creatives, doubt is our kryptonite. The way maybe then you're feeling it right now is I don't have no doubt around me. I don't have people that are doubting in my life.
Is that age?
No, I think it's then to do with having the clarity and understanding yourself, because I know some young people that understand themselves.
To the top.
To like, whoa, I'm thinking, if only I was like you when I was 22. Where would I be now? Do you know what I mean? So I can't then say it's down to age. I think it's down to having the ability to then listen to yourself and listen to God rather than you having all the other voices that sometimes clouds out.
Get them out the way.
Yeah, and things. So some people, their life circumstances have allowed them to have a little bit more clarity. So they've got themselves together a bit earlier than maybe some of us that have had more chaotic lives. I feel that's the... But definitely not easy. I've definitely been the one to either oversell what I'm doing or feel like I'm just want to get it done and whatever not. And in that side of it, you end up either getting the raw deal or end up getting no deal. And that's been. And then I've had times, like most people wouldn't know and everything, is that away from then, or some would know that away from my sister passing the same time that One Dance happened, me, myself, I didn't ever go out and hear the song in the club while I was number one for 15 weeks. I didn't ever go out and go out and celebrate or anything like that. Like, that wasn't where I was at. So there's so many opportunities that I did then miss off the back of it. So you could have been able to then do that thing where people would have wanted to come up to me, but I wasn't there.
On this position right here, and you know, this chapter of the podcast. One Dance, Drake's, in my opinion, he's fine as fucking... I mean, and I've said it many times on the podcast, I'm a Drake fan. And, you know, just the to be in a position of authenticity and have the success, Drake's got it. That's just my opinion. And One Dance for me was, it epitomised that relationship between Canada and the UK. And just, and you being part of that mix in making that transition happen, come on, smashed it.
Bro.
Smashed it. How did this come about? How did that come about?
My lawyer called me. Do be like, do I know Drake? I'm like, brother, do you know who Drake is? You know what I mean? Like, you're asking me if I know Drake. Like, come on, man. He ain't big pop star, but come on, my guy. I listen to the mixtapes and all this stuff. He's hot on the road.
Because it was at that time.
It was still like on tape. So I listen, you catch Drake like on a little mixtape on YouTube or stuff, or Spinrilla. He wasn't then like,
yeah,
that day, you know what I mean? I'm not sure if he even had like any bait features or that, of anything, maybe little Rihanna or something, but he wasn't then. But Bars for Days, yeah, he had that. Like, that was at the same time, like, Migos and them lot was doing their little thing. Right. So, yeah, he was just getting, like, it would seem like Migos were putting out a mixtape every week.
Yeah, he was on that.
Yeah, yeah.
He was cut above, though, man.
Yeah, he was just, but his thing was standing out for him. So, yeah, so I'm like, okay. Ended up then having a call with his manager, just literally Future and stuff. It was me and Pearlface. He said, yeah, he wanted to arrange a three-way call, wanted to play us a song that he's then got at the time. I'm not even sure what or what's going on. When I heard the song, the first thing I said is, bro, yeah, I believe this is going to do all right. Like, this sound like a song my mum's going to get to hear it.
Mm.
Yeah, I'm definitely not going to be able to sell the rights on this one. We need to do the business right. At the time, like, everyone else, they're saying, Corey, sign. I said, listen to me, good. I'm going to spin the wheel, and where God wants it to land. If it went down to me, I'd have spun it three more times and asked for more and more. I should have really even spun it.
Yeah, that Wheel
time,
of Fortune
but,
moment.
Yeah, but everyone's
for that
all
star
in my
to
arm.
Come around.
Yeah, everyone's all in my arm. Like, no, I say, no, trust me. If we go back to them one more time on the email and just say that we would like.
Bro, how much ball does that take, though? That must have just been like in your head. Come on. That must have been like, oh, fuck.
Wait, it wasn't
Send.
A situation to fuck up. I can't lie. But my heart was just telling me, say, right, if you don't ask, you don't get it. Like, I'm a poor kid coming from the streets. Like, Ross, I'm like, right, these man's going to get me. Yeah, I'm going to need, boom, me accredited as writer, publisher, and as a label.
Life-changing
because
shit,
that's forever then changes that life and also just opens up doors I ain't even then bothered to knock on yet. Do you know what I mean? That doors that have then been hollering at me, I've not bothered to walk through. But that was an amazing blessing. Went up to South Africa with them boys as well. So went to Johannesburg, went to Soweto to like a place called Cliptown. Like real ghetto, like where people's like living in zinc, like fence houses and stuff like that.
Whoa.
Like we're rolling around, like in there, it's mad. Like in South Africa, the security's like the Dutch guys, like the Boers. They're rolling around with us to these mad machine guns. And all, but in South Africa, they're classed as terrorists.
What?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, if you're rolling around in South Africa and you ain't black and you got a machine gun, you're a terrorist.
Cool, wow.
Yeah, it's crazy, but we're rolling with them, man. I felt much safer. I'm not going to pretend, but yeah, that's how this is. Westworld's crazy,
yeah,
bro.
Yeah,
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 but beautiful place. So yeah, went to the old, so yeah, we've done the Four Seasons and that. Then, man, wait, their bars is real life. Went to Cliptown, saw the real ghetto and that. And just an amazing thing to open up. But like I said, I wasn't in the position to capitalize. And I feel that's why even you're saying, making it look easy and the rest of it. It's funny, like I have a running joke that like people, because maybe I'm so laid back or it's the Jamaican side of me, people think, oh yeah, man, he's just making it seem so easy. I'm like, bruh, believe me, this has not been easy. Not mentally, not emotionally. It's been a whole battle in itself. And I feel that that's the part of it what people don't want to admit that, yeah, if you love this thing, you need to go to your bed hungry. Mm. Like, it's going to mess up your personal relationships. It's going to mess up your business relationships. You're going to make mistakes. Something always suffers. And I feel that that's the part of it where no one wants to just admit that, like, yo, in order for me to get here, other shit had to give.
Yes, cross to bear. There's a cross to bear on it. Yeah, yeah, you're absolutely right. You don't know, like, sometimes I could be in my own mental pain because I'm just programmed the way I am. My intentions of, yeah, I love my family. My actions don't represent that. You know what I mean? Like, there's loads of people that take L's in different ways to get to the place they are. So you can't afford to be sitting there going, yo, what the fuck's he doing? What's she doing? How come... Nah.
No, it don't work like
there's
that.
There's L's so that are being L's hit.
There's L's like
hit.
Crazy and stuff like that. Yeah, like so I know that, yeah, I've definitely had that balance. So as much as then, yeah, there's crazy winds, crazy doors and things that are happening, I also then very mindful and always remember that, yeah, there was times I'm like, rah, am I actually doing the right thing? Or is this...
Self-doubt.
Yeah, and that's the thing. That's what I said to you, like, with us as creatives, like, doubts are kryptonite.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So if you've got, like, doubt in your work life, then you'll start doubting your personal life and start doubting your music. If you've got doubt in your personal life, you'll start doubting your work and start... So it's because you've got those people that would even plant seeds of doubt, or you've got people that will water them. But before you know it, you've got a forest of doubt in your head. So it's like, yo, for me, that's why I don't really then deal with people that they might have their own doubts. So because they've got all these doubts, they're trying to then take doubt out of their head and put in mine. I'm like, bro, I don't even communicate with those sorts of people. Just to protect my energy, because I feel that that's the massive thing that creatives don't understand is that our energy and protecting our light is the most important thing, because we can't deal with doubt. That's what the thing that will make us not put out that record, not take that leap of faith. And then compared to like when we're younger, like that's what it is. So for me, yeah, I just be like a kid with what I do. I think that's what maybe why I then do the bits I do, because I don't have no doubt. This is what's going to happen. This is how it's going to be. And if I don't think that's how it's going to be, then I just don't do it.
But you make it look fun.
Yeah, because I'm having fun with it. I have fun every day.
Well, you look like you. I mean, and I know a lot of this is because of the genres in which you choose your lanes on. Like, it's a youthful sport. It's a fun sport.
I feel that part of it definitely plays, because a lot of the different genres, like even if I do like stuff where it's reggae and it's a bit like the Jay Prince new school artist, but he's coming with that older sound. It's like, yeah, how are we then bringing through these new school talents? Because he's based in Jamaica and stuff. Like, my next artist coming through. He's much more of a Grammy artist. So like, I'm excited about him as much as Cristal. Those are the next two that are my focus as far as then acts. And it's like, really, I've got the blessing of then doing what I enjoy and everything. So I always say it, like, even to my sister, I said, right, I don't go to work, I go to nursery. You hear me? So, so I go to play every day. I don't know everyone else does, but my things don't work.
Sometimes the play gets serious, but we're still playing.
We're still playing, man. Sometimes people get hurt in the playground, you know what I mean? It's part of it, but generally, like, yeah, I go to play every day, man. Like, those who's coming into this music thing and you don't love it or it's just work, no, this is not the industry for them. Like, no, this is fun and games. This is
It is fun and games.
Yeah, it is, man. If you're then feeling, if it gets to that point where it's not, that's when you need to kind of read. Because I've had when it's not fun and games. I've had when it doesn't feel like it's working. You need to just step back and kind of then reevaluate what you're doing. Because then at the time, what's how it will feel is that when you're then going through it, because it can be a cutthroat industry. So when you're going through it at the time, you feel like it's personal. You feel like it's you one.
Yeah, this thing.
When you step back now and you're just on the sideline, you see everyone else stabbing each other in the back anyway. You realise this shit's not personal, it's business, bro.
Bro, I've said this before, especially in the early podcasts, like the first 60 were the most informative. It's not what they talk on the podcast, it's what they talk after the podcast.
Yeah.
And you realise that some of the highest artists, the most established, they still have the same conversations and complaints and things that go on with the lower.
Yeah.
It's like, it's a run. Yeah. And doesn't matter where you are on the pecking order of things and what people perceive it to be, it's still the same.
Yeah.
The same gripes, the same problems. You just got to take a step back and evaluate.
Yeah, and at the time they're thinking, yeah, it's just them, but wrong. When they then actually see, regardless of where they're at, it's still, yeah, it's everybody's going through it, man. So, no, totally, man, it's been like an exciting journey, but for us, it's like the new chapter now. It's like, yeah, so I'm excited seeing how what then I believe was then where UK rap and UK culture should be. Like all them years ago, I'm flying out to New York, I'm flying out to Miami and saying, yo, no, this is our music. Like, put us on. They're like, brother, I'm like, yeah, we got UK rap. And I remember I was in Miami at the Winter Music Convention, like, fuck, when was that? That's before I even had the studio. So we're talking like 16, 17 years ago. And I'm saying, yeah, boom, you got my UK rap CD promoting my little thing. And they're saying, yo, man, yeah, UK rap's reaching out here. Like, you know Craig David, right? I was like, oh. And I rate Craig David's thing. He's a G. Like, so big up Craig, big up Miss Dynamite, because they was the only two that I heard their music in America back then. No one else was even.
I heard Dizzy Fix Up as well. I jumped in a car over there. Sick. Music. But I also did hear the others. They played all that all the way through.
Yeah, that's what you heard them. It Takes More and Rare, I heard them. But but the fact that, that was the closest thing they could see towards UK rap was that, that means that he was expecting, when he put my CD in, my thing was going to then, was going to come with the Monday. Do you remember that? I say, no, but I'll come in with my hard bricks, them bars, telling about the streets. That's not what they was anticipating from the UK, because at that time, people was finding it hard to accept that UK had street culture.
So that's what
a big hindrance for rap was. It wasn't that the labels or anything like that. It was that us as a place that people saw as like tea and crumpets and all the rest of it, because we didn't have really like gun culture. They didn't, and even then when we did have it, it wasn't then like as mainstream like America. Then by the time we've got to this real gang culture that they're seeing now, it's only because the media made such a hoo-ha about all the stabbings and the rest of it, or the rest of the world wouldn't even giving it the time of the year either. So for what then, it's funny that the media have then demonized. They've also created this demand for these street kids, because they've actually put a focus and made it... the irony is that, because anything you demonize and that you made it that, so you're not meant to have, then the other kids want it.
So it's almost
that's
the case.
So it's, that's the thing, you made it taboo. So you know what I mean? So it's like, if it's taboo, then you want it.
Yeah.
Even if you look like a year and 2 years ago, everyone's dress sense was very dark, very hoodies and all the rest of it. But now we're getting to that whole colourful, people are getting their dance routines going
on. Mid-90s look.
Yeah, we're getting to the mid-90s now. You know what I mean? Silk shirts is coming next.
Let's see, Father MC's and what the other ones.
We're getting to that era now. So we're at that Tupac and Biggie Smalls era. We're just getting to that whole puffy and that little take.
We're getting them blow up suits to be flying around.
Yeah, it's getting to that bit now. Entertainment, it's getting to that fun. So we're going to see then now hip hop culture then in itself have a room for there to be other artists other than just drill. We see their money even invested in developing this next talent or developing these next sounds. Unfortunately, even for the ones that you're saying that are being bottlenecked, like everybody, they're only trying to jump on this street wave because that's where the check's at. If money was being spent on any of the other areas, people would be trying to go
doing that too.
But at the moment, as long as then the whether it's the powers that be or whichever machines, as long as they only spend money on kids that are from a gang or on street culture, but won't then spend money on kids that are just talented, then there's no way that anyone's going to feel that then, other than going through the bottleneck, it's going to work for them. So I don't blame those people who's trying to fit in right now, because there isn't any other indication. And this is me that's waited like 20 years for the street culture to be like a thing. I knew it would be. I told my mum one day, being this naughty is going to work out.
In fact, be naughtier and you get more successful.
That's the irony.
Trust
me. Now it's like PhD in letters after my name. But
being
my
bad mom, pills feels pretty good, don't it?
It paid off finally. But fuck, that shouldn't be the route. You know what I mean? For me, I'm like, those real opportunities that are there should be available for just different sorts of talent. As soon as we start investing in different talent, so like for me, I'm investing in R&B, I'm investing in young talent, I'm bringing through kids that are not gang related as well, because all the gangers and bangers, they all around me. That's how I'm Uncle Core, but it's like, well, there's good kids, and a lot of the ones that are maybe in those gangs or crews, they're good youths. They're just in social circumstances. I'm sure if there was then that sort of resource, a lot of them have got their little dance routines. A lot of them want maybe, I just want to paint. I just want to do my little pottery thing. You don't know, but right now they just want to conform and fit into the...
And it will flush.
But I feel like entertainment's going to grow. I don't think everybody's as hard or as dark and...
I feel like we've got
more to offer. I believe that. I got more faith in the next generation. I believe that there's a wide range of very intelligent, very articulated, like eclectic individuals are going to come through. I don't think it's as dark. That's why I'm like, man, the silk shirts are coming next. The moves is coming next. Yeah. I believe in them like that. You know what I mean? I'm like, this is entertainment, but we're going to have big shows and dance routines.
And it will naturally integrate.
Yeah, big stage, everything, man.
And also, I might just add at this point, there is collaborations in effect all the time. Stormzy and Banksy, the collaboration they did at Glastonbury, big up that. Yeah. You know, MK with Dizzy, the Scratch DJing with Dizzy Rascal. And, you know, just people that come from a rap background. And, you know, Rag and Bone Man, MC, Battle MC, now Sings, you know, there's all of that. That does come into play, doesn't it?
I thought that's why there needs to be more money, because since Rag and Bone Man, I ain't seen no next Rag and Bone Man kind of artist then really get a...
Shine,
I think. And no one can't say that there ain't no kid who got that talent, but he needs a budget.
Mm. Budget's key.
Yeah. Definitely, but with algorithm, paid ads and all the rest of it, you need that money. So it's like, if you're going to invest, if you could make another Rag and Bone Man, because there would be definitely a kid that's that talented, but who wants to invest in that sound? I don't know, but I feel that there's more talent, more sounds, more things that we can then develop here in the UK. I feel that that's the thing, and much as then, the hip-hop and underground rap has been my thing, I'm just a fan of good music. Just good music, and I feel that that's what we need more of. So I feel like, we're a part of this arts and this heritage and a part of this music culture. We've contributed. The same thing I said to my friend at the BBC the other day is like, Stormzy, he's the poster boy of our thing. But most people don't even really actually putting it down to, but Stormzy and these drill artists, they're paying furlough. Their money in the last 2 years has contributed to the UK economy through streams, through shows, through royalties, PRS and BMI and beyond. Yeah. And that's what then the government's using, because we haven't got nothing growing out of the ground or manufacturing anything, but the music that they've been streaming, that's been contributing to the economy. So Stormzy's paying furlough.
For that question.
That's it.
So like, I'm saying.
Yeah, so the parents need to be turning the drill up, turn up Stormzy.
Play that.
Put it on repeat. Stormzy being furlough.
The drill scene is something that I'm just so fucking fascinated by, because it holds all the hallmarks of the worst nightmare for any mum and dad, you know, living in happy suburbia, middle England. What the fuck's going on? They're coming for our kids. It's so NWA. It's amazing.
And I think that's what makes it so exciting as well, because a lot of even the artists, they're very intelligent businessmen.
Hell yeah.
So this is now becoming the business that their friends and them are then building now. This is not just about one or two individuals. So, but at the same time as well, this is the music and the passion and their culture. These kids around the world, they can feel the energy. And I feel that because it's getting shown to them, I feel that, to the parents, it may be coming across as it's scary, but it's not as scary as it sounds. I feel like the scary thing is most probably is that you're seeing a young force of kids that multicultural coming from these poor backgrounds and they're making money now. And I think that that's what the scariest thing is the social and the economic part of this, that it's not that they're just making music and, they're making music that's angry, because all of them ain't.
No.
The scary bit is that they're making money and getting financial independence.
And you can't stop them.
And you can't stop them.
Which is the biggest power. Artistry, full stop. It's that fearless drive of what else have I fucking got?
Yeah.
I'm doing this.
Yeah, and that's it. And I feel that's what the thing of it is that something that you can't stop. I think that's what people be scared of.
Yeah. Punk has that. Still has. But punk had that same reaction to Joe Public. And like you were saying about the media, the more it's portrayed, the more it's like, for punks, an example of punk, Motorhead, when they first started, they were slandered as being like the worst band in the world, but all the kids showed up because they wanted to see the worst band in the world.
And that's what, and I think that's what then comes. It's the same like with the Mods and Quadrophenia times. That kind of youth culture and that kind of what was happening with us, that rebellion. That's what drove that sound and everything like that. It was about youth culture and what's happening within social and economic circumstances. Mm. that's what this sound is, regardless of the genre. This isn't kids killing each other. This is kids talking about the circumstances they're in, where then they're feeling like they have to kill each other, or their friends are being killed because other people who then maybe have then marginalized them within society have then restricted the resources from them having, from primary school to youth clubs to even just general their five little needs in life, even not being taken care of from an early age.
These
are social and economic results of this country neglecting the background and the backbone of those that work and keep it ticking over.
So don't shoot the messenger boy. Like they're just dropping the science.
This is all there is. This is just the messengers to say, yeah, this is what we've then created. The same way, like, we then have people and we ship them out to country towns because they maybe haven't kept up with their rent, or they're then maybe not then as articulate as some of the others. But then we're then surprised that when you've got then a country town where there's a group of them vulnerable people, where then they might then get a group of any age of hustlers that's going to go there and be then supplying drugs to them and then taking prey on them. But the government's kind of dumped everyone where there's a lack of police, lack of support, lack of soul.
We'll deal with that later.
It's like, so are these kids making the problem, or are they just there because the problem's there? Are they then being the problem being made for them? So it's like the government's creating OT or are the kids? Because I don't know. For me, it's like, why are there so many vulnerable people placed in an area with lack of resources, travel and policing? I don't know.
The human brain, it likes a beginning, middle and an end. This is like a Kilroy, Jeremy Kyle hour-long conversation to an audience, telling the stories of what's right, what's wrong, and then they shut it off at the end. It's like, okay, what's the next thing? Oh, God. So-and-so just had a new kid on the program.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, but this story continues, and it keeps on going, and it keeps on evolving. There's more casualties to the streets. There's more problems that are occurring with every twist and turn. And, like you say, drill is just a mere conduit to that story. It's a fucking scary time right now, isn't it?
Yeah, I think for society, not for music, but for society.
Yeah.
Because unemployment highest in 300 years, nothing that we're actually then providing to the rest of the world. Music, there's life in that. There's hope.
There's
money. There's an economy in that. Yeah. It's those that's not within our world that's then there. This is a scary time because what's the next generation going to be manufacturing? What are we selling to the world? Because I know we're selling creativity and we're selling music. I don't know what the rest of England's selling.
I've got a question for you, and I think it be one that you're way more appropriately to be asking. We've come out of lockdown, hold tight, get your glow sticks ready, we're going raving. Industry, when going back into an industry, shit has to change. It can't be how we left it. It just doesn't work like that. For it to really ramp up, and for people that, you know, that are have been in the game and they're moving and shaking, but they know that this lockdown has helped them because they've had to take stock, rejig, recalibrate with the things that they knew and change it into something else. What do you forecast is the best opportunity for businesses now coming back into a landscape that marginally it ain't going to have so many clubs open? It's going to have a lot more financial losses than gains. In a live circuit sense. So what's your vision of us coming back into an industry like music now?
Two things. One, like it says on the tin, I'm in the entertainment business. I think that's the first thing that we need to remember, that this is entertainment more than just music. So the way that we create film, podcasts and stuff like that, this is entertainment. So I feel that part of it is that more facet and use of our music needs to be a bit more, people need to utilise that a lot more. So it's like then creating opportunities for your music to be used in different ways. Secondly, as far as then like live music, I believe that there's two sides of it. this is where you've got the businessman in me and the independent revolutionist, and then you've got the reality of it. The maths of it is that if people worked together and two artists decided that they was going to put on their own tour, even 5 dates, they'd get more money and be able to then even start at a 300 capacity venue. And based on your sales, you could have another venue that's in the local area that if your sales are doing all right, you can move up to a larger venue, like a 500-600. You do like a couple shows like that, automatically the power then comes back then to the artists.
Mm-hmm.
And the revenue and stuff from that, you'd be able to sell your merchandise, stream and do your thing, and have the entertainment value. That is what's going to then be the way forward. It's either that we have the mentality of get up and do, or sit down and waiting for it to be done. I've never been one to sit down and wait for it to be done. And eventually I'm there, and that's what it is. So we get up and do, and I feel that that's what the difference is. I feel if we're going to sit around waiting to be given, we ain't going to be given shit.
Yeah. Coy Johnson inside the place. Right. A real pleasure, my brother. Oh, come honestly.
On, man. No, pleasure is mine, my bro, man. I appreciate what you're doing as well. For not just for the hip hop, but just for the music culture, man. I see you, my brother, man. So
my guy, likewise. Killer Keller podcast, strike with a vengeance once again. Blocker, come on. Yeah, sharing is caring, you know what to do. We're out like him without a fashion. Don't talk to anyone I wouldn't. Stay lucky, people. Peace.
Yeah. Boom. Oh, boom. That was nice, broski.